طفلة تمتطي قوس قزح.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly 45-minute segment of news from Palestine and discussion of issues relative to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's brutal military occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, a perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. We ask our listeners, as we do every week, were you involved last week in the Palestinian-Israel peace movement and the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's savage military attacks against them to force them out of their homes and annex their properties into Israel? Did you speak out on the atrocities Israel is committing every day in Gaza and the West Bank? If not, why not? What is your reason not to? We cannot overemphasize to our listeners that the best thing you can do is to go to Palestine and experience the situation on the ground for yourselves. There is nothing that can bring home to you the realities on the ground in Palestine than to go there and see for yourselves. Never mind what you hear out of the filter of the mainstream media, or for that matter, what you may hear in this program. The best way to discover the truth is to go and see for yourselves. Nothing that you may have read or heard could prepare you for what you will see.
Well, that's the voice of Sharif Pham, who is the normal host of This Week in Palestine. And this week, we are going to have to go without Sharif. He has helped us to pick out a couple of items to air. And incidentally, the length of the program today is going to be just about half an hour and not the accustomed 45 minutes. Today is Sunday, September 20th, 2009. And I want to tell you about three events that are coming up in the very near future, and also one deadline. The first event is an opportunity to hear Avi Shlaim speak on the subject, Israel, the Strategy of the Iron Wall Revisited. Avi Shlaim is professor of international relations at University of Oxford, and you can hear him by coming to the Weatherhead Center for International Affairs at Harvard this Tuesday afternoon, September 22nd, starting at 4 o'clock p.m. The location is 1737 Cambridge Street in Cambridge, room K354. This is jointly sponsored by the Weatherhead Center and the Center for Middle Eastern Studies at Harvard. And there's some contact information which will be posted on Truth and Justice Radio's website, truthandjusticeradio.org. Now, here's the deadline that I wanted to tell you about. Friends of Sabeel North America, the voice of Palestinian Christians, is having a conference for peacemakers called Framing the Discourse, Mobilizing for Action, October 1st through 3rd. That's next week. That's in Washington, D.C., and the pre-registration discount has been extended to this coming Tuesday, September 22. If you want some more information about this, you can go to fosna.org, F-O-S-N-A.org, there's plenty of information there, too. You can download a brochure, etc., about the conference. This coming Friday, September 25th, you can see the Boston premiere of the film Amrika, Kendall Square Cinema 1 Kendall Square in Cambridge, at 7:10 p.m. on Friday. And it is possible to get a free ticket by writing an email to Middle East Initiative, and there's underscores between those three words, at hks.harvard.edu. The third event is an opportunity to hear two Israeli women who went to jail rather than kill Palestinians, Maya Wind and Netta Mishli. They are speaking Saturday, October 3rd, which is next week, in Storrs, Connecticut. The address will appear on our website. They're also speaking on Tuesday, October 6, which is the following week at 4:30 p.m. at Central Connecticut State University in New Britain, Connecticut. For more information on this, you can go to whywerefuse.org or also check back at our source, which is thestruggle.org. The first thing that Sharif ordinarily does is cover recent current events from the point of view of Palestinians. To serve that function, we are going to air this week's weekly report from the IMEMC. After that's done, we're going to air an interview that Amy Goodman did last Wednesday, and it's already been broadcast on this station, but we think it bears broadcasting once again and perhaps more. She interviewed Norman Finkelstein, and the subject was the recent report done by Judge Goldstone of the Israeli war crimes. This was something that was authorized by the United Nations. We really regard Norman Finkelstein as one of the clearest possible voices that you can ever hear. Actually, we really take a lot of pride in broadcasting clear voices on the Israeli-Palestine situation. Norman Finkelstein is right up there. So tune up your ears. We're going to start right off with the IMEMC report and follow that with Amy Goodman's interview.
Welcome to This Week in Palestine, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for September 12th to September 18th, 2009. Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas branded Israeli settlement activities on occupied Palestinian land as an obstacle to peace with Israel, while Israeli attacks in the West Bank and Gaza leave two dead. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. Let's begin our weekly report with the nonviolent activities in the West Bank with IMEMC's Ghassan Banoura.
Dozens suffered the effects of tear gas inhalation on Friday during the weekly protest in the village of Bil'in, Central West Bank. Villagers, along with international and Israeli peace activists, marched from the village after the midday prayers. When the demonstrators approached the closed gate in the barrier, they tried to open it and cross to their land, but Israeli soldiers who were hiding behind concrete blocks launched tear gas and sound bombs, causing tens of cases of suffocation. Israeli military attacks continued this week to target the organizers of the weekly nonviolent protests in Bil'in. On Tuesday, troops attacked and searched the house of Abdullah Abu Rahma, coordinator of the popular committee in the village. During the attack, troops assaulted local journalist Imad Burnat and destroyed his camera. Bil'in has been the scene of weekly nonviolent demonstrations against the Israeli wall for 4 years. Also in the Central West Bank on Friday, scores of civilians suffered effects of tear gas inhalation and nausea as Israeli soldiers attacked the weekly protest against the wall in the village of Na'ilin. International and Israeli peace activists joined the villagers in conducting the Friday prayers at the land where Israel is building the wall. Later on, local youth set old car tires on fire near the concrete wall. Soldiers showered the protesters with water mixed with chemicals and tear gas, causing scores of cases of tear gas inhalation and nausea. Some of the youth managed to hang a Palestinian flag on top of the concrete blocks of the wall before the army stopped them. The demonstration ended as local youth hurled stones at attacking soldiers who fired rubber-coated steel bullets at them. No injuries were reported. For IMEMC.org, this is Ghassan Banoura.
Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas branded Israeli settlement activities on occupied Palestinian land as an obstacle to peace with Israel. Meanwhile, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu refused findings of a UN-led investigative report on the January Israeli war on Gaza. IMEMC's Jessica Halsey reports.
Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas is set to meet on Saturday with Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak. This week, the president expressed his concern over continued Israeli settlements being built on occupied West Bank land and forceful eviction of Palestinian residents from occupied East Jerusalem. Abbas's remarks came this week after he met with U.S. Middle East Special Envoy George Mitchell in Ramallah. Mitchell also met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu with no concrete progress reported, particularly concerning the halt of settlement activity in the occupied West Bank. Washington has always demanded that Israel stop such activities before peace talks with the Palestinians can resume. Palestinian Authority has made it clear that it would not embark on negotiations with Israel unless settlement activity, including those for natural growth purposes, are halted completely. In another issue, national unity between the Gaza-based Hamas and the West Bank-based Fatah parties is yet to be achieved. Egyptian-mediated efforts continued over the week. The rival parties initially responded to an Egyptian-produced reconciliation document. The document primarily calls for holding general Palestinian elections by mid-2010, while Fatah insists that elections be held in due time on January 25, 2010. Hamas says no elections can be held before a unity agreement is reached. In the meantime, Richard Goldstone, chairman of a UN fact-finding mission in Gaza, accused Israel of wantonly killing Gaza civilians during the Israeli war on the Gaza Strip in January of 2009. Israel refused Goldstone's report, as its Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu called the report kangaroo court. The said war rendered at least 1,400 Gazans killed. Almost half of them were women and children. For IMEMC.org, this is Jessica Holsey.
Israeli attacks on Gaza were reported this week as a child dies due to the siege imposed in the coastal region from the Gaza Strip, IMEMC's Ramin Mirari reports.
On Monday, doctors reported that Hoda Kandil, a three-year-old child, died when she was prevented from leaving Gaza for life-saving medical care. Hoda was suffering from cancer. Despite her family having completed the necessary documents required to exit, the military refused to allow her to leave. The Palestinian Ministry of Health in Gaza announced that the number of patients who have died since the siege began June 2007 has reached 356. Hospitals in Gaza are left unable to treat patients effectively. Also on Monday, the Israeli military kidnapped the three Palestinian civilians from central Gaza during an invasion targeting the border areas. Witnesses said that the troops kidnapped three civilians while tanks opened fire at nearby homes. Damage to buildings was reported, but no injuries. Meanwhile, Palestinian fighters attacked the invading forces and fired a number of homemade shells at Israeli tanks. The Israeli military admitted that the troops came under fire during the invasion but reported no injuries. Two Palestinian civilians were injured by Israeli fire near Khan Yunis in the southern Gaza Strip on Tuesday midday. Doctors said that Fadi Abu Muammar, 28, and his brother Muhammad, 26, were hit by fragments of a tank shell that exploded near them. Both sustained moderate wounds. Witnesses said that Israeli tanks opened fire on residents near Khan Yunis without warning. Since last week, Israeli tanks have been attacking border areas of the Gaza Strip daily. At least 40 Palestinian civilians were likely injured as a cooking gas tank exploded inside a restaurant at Jabalia refugee camp in the northern part of the Gaza Strip. Medical sources said that all 40 of the injured were moved to hospitals for treatment. For IMEMC.org, this is Rami Al-Mirari in Gaza.
This week, the Israeli military conducted at least 24 invasions into Palestinian communities in the West Bank. Troops kidnapped at least 30 Palestinian civilians, including a child. IMEMC's Luke Peterson reports.
On Saturday, Obeda Adwaik, 25, from the southern West Bank city of Hebron, died of wounds caused by the Israeli military last month. Israeli troops shot Dwaik in August at Hebron Old City, claiming that he tried to attack them with a knife. He was wounded by several gunshots to the abdomen and to the legs. Soldiers did not allow Palestinian ambulances to attend him. They evacuated him to an Israeli hospital. Five civilians were reported injured on Thursday at dawn during attacks by the Israeli military targeting a number of West Bank communities. Local sources reported attacks in Bethlehem and Hebron cities in the southern West Bank, as well as in Jenin in the north. Four men were attacked by soldiers at a military checkpoint outside Bethlehem City, while one man was beaten up by troops inside the old city of Hebron, sources added. On Tuesday, a group of armed Israeli settlers attacked Palestinian farmers in the northern West Bank, injuring one of them. Local sources said that the settlers attacked the farmers as they worked on their lands in the village of Einabos near Nablus. Witnesses said that settlers opened fire at them, injuring Nader Hashim, 37, and also killing a number of sheep. Doctors said that Hashim sustained wounds to his chest, but he is in stable condition. The farmer said that the settlers from the illegal Yitzhar settlement have attacked them on a number of occasions this week. In June, the Israeli military said it would stop its invasions into the cities of Ramallah and Qalqilia, as well as Bethlehem and Jericho. However, to date, attacks targeting those cities have continued. In other news this week, 8 cases of H1N1, better known as swine flu, were discovered on Wednesday in the northern West Bank city of Nablus. The Palestinian Ministry of Health in the city announced that with the 8 cases, the total number of H1N1 cases has reached 15 since Tuesday. On Tuesday, the Palestinian Authority closed down a school in Nablus after discovering 7 cases of H1N1 among students there. The Palestinian Ministry of Health added that 6 of the 8 cases were from students of the same school closed on Tuesday, while the other 2 were parents from a student of the same school. For IMEMC.org, this is Luke Peterson.
And that's just some of the news from This Week in Palestine. For regular updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Thank you for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. This week's report has been brought to you by Dina Awad.
This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. A United Nations fact-finding mission has found Israel, quote, punished and terrorized civilians in its 3-week assault on Gaza earlier this year, and cited strong evidence that Israeli forces committed grave breaches of the Geneva Conventions. More than 1,400 Palestinians, about a third of them women and children, were killed in the assault. 13 Israelis died. The 575-page report came at the end of a 6-month inquiry and was based on dozens of interviews and investigations. The inquiry was led by Judge Richard Goldstone, the former chief prosecutor of the International Courts for Yugoslavia and Rwanda. Judge Goldstone said Israel deliberately attacked civilians and failed to take precautions to minimize loss of civilian life.
We came to the conclusion on the basis of the facts we found that there was strong evidence to establish that numerous serious violations of international law, both humanitarian law and human rights law, were committed by Israel during the military operations in Gaza. The mission concluded that actions amounting to war crimes, and possibly in some respects crimes against humanity, were committed by the Israel Defense Force.
Judge Goldstone also said there was evidence that Palestinian armed groups committed war crimes by firing rockets into southern Israel.
Established in sin, this is why...
Turning to the Palestinian armed groups, there's no question that the firing of rockets and mortars was deliberate and calculated to cause loss of life and injury to civilians and damage to civilian structures. The mission found that these actions also amount to serious war crimes and also possibly crimes against humanity.
Judge Goldstone's report will be presented to the UN Human Rights Council later this month. The investigators recommended the UN Security Council should call on Israel and the Palestinian authorities to launch their own investigations into the conflict within 3 months. If either side failed to do that, the council should refer the matter to the International Criminal Court prosecutor in The Hague within 6 months. Israel, which had refused to cooperate with the investigation, claimed Goldstone's investigation was biased against Israel. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu held consultations with top government officials last night. A senior Israeli staffer told Haaretz newspaper, quote, "The goal is to avoid a slippery slope which would lead Israel to the International Criminal Court in The Hague." Well, Norman Finkelstein joins us here in our Firehouse studio, the author of a number of books, including The Holocaust Industry, Image and Reality of the Israel-Palestine Conflict, and Beyond Chutzpah. His forthcoming book about Israel's assault on Gaza is due out at the end of the year, on the first anniversary of the attack. We welcome you to Democracy Now! Now, this report has just really come out hours ago. Perhaps you're among the few people outside those who have written the report who have actually read the majority of its contents. Talk about the significance of this.
Well, the report is the last in a large number of reports that have been issued in the Gaza massacre. There were two significant reports issued by Amnesty International, five reports issued by Human Rights Watch, and a whole slew of Israeli-based human rights organizations have issued reports. But this was the most awaited report of all of them. It was commissioned by the UN Human Rights Council. And Richard Goldstone, as you mentioned in your own introductory remarks, is a significant international figure, legal figure. The report basically is consistent with the findings of the other human rights organizations that Israel targeted civilians. Israel targeted civilians who were carrying white flags. Israel systematically targeted the Palestinian infrastructure. The findings were consistent with those of the other human rights organizations. Israel is guilty of a very significant number of war crimes. And also the findings, which were other reports, the same conclusions, that Israel, that the Palestinians were not using hospitals to hide Hamas officials. There's no evidence that the ambulances Israel targeted were carrying Hamas militants or ammunition. And most significantly, in terms of the coverage during the Gaza massacre, the report found, as did Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, there's no evidence whatsoever, and I would want to underline that, there's no evidence whatsoever that Hamas was guilty of human shielding. But on the other hand, there is significant evidence, actually copious evidence, that Israel was guilty of human shielding.
But on other issues of Palestinian militants committing crimes against humanity?
The report found that the Palestinians were guilty of war crimes because of its indiscriminate and intentional firing on civilians in Israel. I'm not trying to make any apologies, but I want to get the facts right. The Goldstone report, like the Amnesty report and the others, you have to look carefully at the proportions. About nine-tenths of the Goldstone report, like the Dugard report, like the Amnesty report, about nine-tenths was devoted to Israeli war crimes, about one-tenth was devoted to Palestinian war crimes. And you have to understand why, because you have to look at the comparable damage. The ratio of killings was about 100 to 1, about exactly 13 on the Israeli side, about 1,400 on the Palestinian side. If you look at the damage is actually quite astonishing. Israel just systematically blasted everything in sight and reduced it to rubble. Whereas on the Israeli side, they say that several houses were damaged and one was almost completely destroyed. So if you look at the facts on the ground, the proportions in the reports, including the Goldstone report, are correct. It's about 10 to 1. And that's why today's headline, the New York Times, is so misleading. It's like a Pravda headline. It says the Goldstone report finds both sides guilty of war crimes. Well, that's technically true, but an accurate headline would have read, Goldstone reports Israel guilty of massive war crimes and also faults Hamas. That's what a true headline would have read.
Well, Israel refused to cooperate with the investigation and has claimed the UN Human Rights Council that ordered it was biased against Israel. This is some of what the Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesperson, Yigal Palmor, had to say about the inquiry.
This fact-finding mission was established in sin. This is why Israel was unable to cooperate with it. The resolution, in virtue of which the commission was established, was so extreme in its phrasing and in its prejudging of any conclusion that all European countries and other democratic countries did not support it. It was adopted with the support of human rights models such as Libya, Bangladesh, Cuba. This, of course, has no moral value whatsoever. So we didn't feel that this was binding in any way. In spite of everything I've just said, Israel is going to study this report, to examine it very carefully, as we have with all the national and international human rights reports. We are taking this seriously, and we are committed, as always, to abide by international law.
Israel's response to the Goldstone report. Your response, Norman Finkelstein.
Well, Richard Goldstone is a very respected jurist, and he also has a long record of being very supportive of Israel. If I'm not mistaken, he sits on the Hebrew University of Jerusalem Board of Directors. Now, when the UN Human Rights Council asked Goldstone to chair the mission, originally his mandate was just to investigate Israeli crimes. He himself said he couldn't fulfill that mandate unless it was modified and included crimes on all sides. The Human Rights Council said, fine, we'll modify the mandate and we'll accept your terms. At that point, Richard Goldstone accepted to head the mission. So you have to ask yourself the question, if what the gentleman said were true, why did Goldstone accept? If it were so biased, he always had the option of saying no. Why would a well-known supporter of Israel have accepted that mandate if it were biased against Israel?
What do you think, Norman Finkelstein, are the limitations of the report?
The main limitation of the report is it's all cast in the language of violations of the laws of war. And the fundamental fact about what happened in Gaza is it wasn't a war. There was no war in Gaza. That's the main misunderstanding about what happened there. In fact, one of Israel's leading strategic analysts, he said after what happened in Gaza, he said, the one mistake Israelis are making is that there was a war there. He said there was no war. There were no battles in Gaza. The picture is fairly clear. Israel flew about 3,000 sorties over Gaza. Every plane came back. None was damaged. None was downed. There was no fighting in Gaza. If you read the reports that were issued by the testimonies of the Israeli soldiers, the one consistent theme in all of the testimonies was they never met any Hamas militants. They never engaged in any battles. Some of the Israeli soldiers expressed exasperation. We came here to fight. We're not fighting anyone. There were no battles. There were no Hamas militants in the field. The basic fact was, is a couple of Israeli soldiers said, one of them said, this was like PlayStation computer game. Another Israeli soldier said, literally, I'm quoting exactly, almost word for word, he said it was like a child with a magnifying glass burning ants. That's what Gaza was like. One soldier after another, literally, I wish listeners would just bring up the report. It's called Breaking the Silence. And then enter under the search mechanism, just enter the word insane. One soldier after another said, Israel used insane amounts of firepower. Insane amounts of firepower. There were no soldiers, no battles, but they're using insane amounts of firepower. One soldier said, two soldiers actually talked about how the ground was trembling because of all the bombing and all of the missiles and all of the rockets. Another said that we were told, even though we were firing in the distance, we were told to evacuate the houses we were in because the shaking from the distance was going to cause the house to collapse over our heads. It was a massacre in Gaza. And you don't really see that because they're measuring everything against what they call the laws of war. But you're applying laws of war to a massacre. There was no war there.
Israel called the attack Operation Cast Lead. It's interesting. Judge Goldstone's daughter was interviewed on Israeli Army radio. She spoke in Hebrew. She responded about her father. She described him as a Zionist who loves Israel. She said that my father took on this job because he thought he's doing the best thing for peace, for everyone, and also for Israel. The significance of this report now, the UN Human Rights Council will meet the day after Yom Kippur in about 2 weeks to meet specifically in a special session on this report. Mm-hmm. And what does this mean for Israel, the quote of the Israeli official to Haaretz saying, we don't want to be put into the International Criminal Court?
I personally don't think that's yet going to go very far because the U.S. has effective power to block it. What's significant about the report, in my opinion, and what's significant about what happened in Gaza, I think it marks a major turning point. It's like the Sharpeville massacre in South Africa. Now, Sharpeville is not Soweto, but Sharpeville was a turning point. Richard Goldstone is a liberal. Richard Goldstone is very supportive of Israel. And it's now marking the breakup of liberal Jewish support for Israel. And as we both know, and as all of your listeners know, Jews are overwhelmingly liberal in their sentiments. 79% of Jews in the last election voted for Obama. And what you're seeing now is the breakup of Jewish support for Israel. You saw during the Gaza massacre, you had some of the old-timers like Alan Dershowitz, Michael Walzer, characters like Martin Peretz, characters like that, you know, kind of comical figures coming out supporting Israel. But if you looked at the younger Jewish constituency, bloggers like Matt Iglesias, Glenn Greenwald, and so forth, they all opposed the Gaza massacre from almost like day one or day two. And then you had significant defections like Andrew Sullivan, who, not Jewish, but still a significant figure, who also came out against the Gaza massacre. So I think now what you're seeing, especially with the Goldstone Report, especially with his stature, especially because he's Jewish, especially because he's liberal, what it's signaling now is the breakup of Jewish support and liberal support, and those are basically the same thing, the breakup of liberal Jewish support for Israel.
Norman Finkelstein, I want to thank you for being with us. Just recently back from Gaza, visited in June. Norman Finkelstein has written a number of books, among them Image and Reality of the Israel-Palestine Conflict and Beyond Chutzpah. His forthcoming book about Israel's assault on Gaza is due out on the first anniversary of the attack on December 27th.
And that is all we have for today. We wish our listeners a pleasant and restful weekend and look forward to having you with us next week, same time. Until then, this is Sharif Fahm signing off for now and reminding our listeners to get involved. Get involved.